You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
You're getting a sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ladd back to the line of Myers. Left point for Toby Enstrom in front. Redirect, rebound, score! Well, there goes the 11-game goal for Drew Stafford.
And the Jets grab back the lead as Stafford gets a big goal. And he had a long
good
walk
afternoon,
upstairs
Winnipeg.
After that one.
Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon as we get you set for this evening's Jets-Coyotes matchup at MTS Center, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290. Started off a couple minutes early today. That's how much of a jam-packed show we have for you on this Saturday afternoon. Joined in the studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Joining us on the program this afternoon in about 30 minutes' time, Phoenix Coyotes, pardon me. I knew I was going to do it.
That was early.
It was early. I was inevitably going to do it, though. The Arizona Coyotes color analyst Tyson Nash from Fox Sports Arizona is going to join us. We'll be joined by Chris King, the senior vice president of hockey operations in the NHL head office in the second hour. Don Maloney, executive vice president and general manager of these Arizona Coyotes, joins us to start off hour number three. And Bruce Lubke, Brandon Wheatking's broadcaster, joins us as well. Gentlemen, I say good morning to you both. Richie, Ezzy, good to see you both. Ezzy, that Movember mustache you got coming in there looks sharp, my friend.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. Movember's always a fun time of year. I always love growing the stash for Legal Curve, so it's definitely going to be a fun day here. It's always fun when the Coyotes are in town, right? So, yeah, I appreciate it. It takes some time to get the mustache going. I grow a better beard, but I appreciate that, and hopefully get some donations for Legal Curve.
Yeah, exactly.
Has Drew donated yet?
I have not. Have you?
Yes, Drew. In fact, I have.
Okay, well, you're doing better than I am right now. So, yes, if you want to donate to Ezzy's mustache, you can check out Ezzy's Movember page. I guess just go to Movember.com and you can find search for Team Illegal Curve.
I'll tweet it out.
Yeah, Ezzy will tweet it out. There you go. Follow him on Twitter, at ICEzzyG.
Wait, Ezzy's got more donations in the past, and I think that's part of the fact that you've been doing this for a few years. It's still just as important as when you started, and it's a great cause, and Ezzy's putting in his time and got the stash going, so hit it up for a donation for sure.
Absolutely. Let's start off with Wednesday evening's Jets victory. Finally, the stink of that negative road trip and that losing streak. Well, I'll ask you guys, is it behind the Jets now as a result of Wednesday's loss? I mean, it's certainly a step in the right direction winning a game, but were there troubling signs that you saw on Wednesday, or do you think that, you know, this looks like a team that's getting back to playing that the way they want to play to be successful?
Well, they have to keep it going, right? Drew, you get one win, that's a nice start, but we said on the midweek show, pardon me, the NHL This Week show,
yeah,
that unless they win all three games, this isn't going to be an impressive homestand, right? So, yes, it was nice that they ended the losing streak, but you have to win against the Coyotes and you have to beat the Avalanche on Monday as well. You know, the Jets have put themselves in a position where they have to come from behind now, and as far as the standings go. And so I thought the Jets were in control of that game on Wednesday night against the Canucks. I didn't think for any point in the game did the Jets lose control of what they were trying to do. So it was a great win, but we know that you can't rest on your laurels here in the Central Division, and you've got two teams coming up that you should beat, that you're better than, in my opinion. So it was nice, though, because this team, you could clearly see it was weighing on them that they had lost so many games in a row, six games without a win. So it was nice. It was a very workmanlike effort, I thought. It was nice to see players like Scheifele and Stafford, who have been struggling offensively, to contribute. So you got to keep it going, though. With the way the Central Division is right now, even the Colorado Avalanche have started to catch up on the Winnipeg Jets. Duncan Keith is back with the Chicago Blackhawks. You know that they're going to get it going eventually. So you got to keep it going, and it starts tonight.
I think that, you know, you win the game, and you play certainly better than you have the past few. I don't think there's any question about that. And you're creating chances and you're getting some guys on the board that haven't been on the board in a while. I still see defensive questions. I would be more, it's one game, but I would be more encouraged if the team played more airtight defensively than they did on Wednesday. I thought they gave up a bunch of chances. I thought Pavlik was very good. And now he's been struggling before that. But if you're a fan, I think you want to see a game where Pavlik has to make 2-3 difficult saves. You know, maybe three to five difficult saves, really difficult saves.
Grade A scoring chances.
Yeah,
I just
think that he had to defend. They allowed more than that. I thought they allowed a lot of good chances, especially in the second period there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they can be better defensively and have to be better defensively. So I think it's an encouraging sign. Had Vancouver, as he maybe had some guys who were a little bit more proficient offensively, it might have been a different score. So, and I don't know if Arizona's going to be the team to do that. Colorado can hurt you offensively with their transition, but defensively they're not great. So maybe trading chances there. But if you're going to be playing against the teams, as you mentioned, Chicago, different teams like that, you have to be better defensively. So I saw it as an encouraging sign, but I may not have been as encouraged as some others just because, again, you have to be able to play defense in this day and age and be able to restrict chances.
And it wasn't a flawless game. They took quite a few penalties again. Mm-hmm. I think Vancouver had 5 power plays in that game, and they only scored 1 goal. But Richie's right. I mean, you saw some good chances for the Vancouver Canucks, and Pavlik was very sharp. And it's still, I think, a work in progress for the Jets. I think they're still learning to play a different style in a way with a much faster and younger team. And I think that still hasn't. We still haven't seen their A defensive game. And I think, you know, he could have gotten a few more goals. But as far as that game goes, we talked about it on the NHL This Week show. We just wanted them to get the 2 points. Didn't really matter how they did it, right? When you have a losing streak mm-hmm. like that, you just have to
Absolutely.
You have to get the 2 points. So you hope that that's a rallying point for this team. And the Arizona Coyotes, even though they're coming in off of a win against the Montreal Canadiens, they've been pretty much 500 since a really hot start. So it's a good Coyotes team, but this is a team that I think they can take advantage of defensively. It's not the best defensive team in the league. And even though you have Mike Smith playing very well, I think the Jets should win this game on paper at least.
We'll talk more about the Coyotes, of course, coming up next segment when we really delve in deep to a preview regarding tonight's game. The new Jets forward lines. We mentioned that Perreault, Scheifele, and Stafford certainly had a terrific debut together. 9 points combined for that line, each member of that line getting 3 points. Perreault with 3 assists, Scheifele and Stafford, 2 goals, 1 assist, 1 assist each. How did you think the new forward lines went? Ladd, Little, Wheeler, Perreault, Scheifele, Stafford, Thorburn, Burmistrov, and Ehlers, Lowry, Kopp, and Peluso. And by all accounts, they're going to stay with that same forward group going into tonight's game as well.
I mean, obviously that Scheifele, Stafford, Perreault line looked like we were able to create chances. As Ian, I thought, looked good. You saw Scheifele look confident. Scheifele's biggest asset is quick release and his wrist shot, so you want him to be able to put pucks on net. And I liked how he looked confident from the left side of the power play there in the half boards and stepping into that shot and scoring the first goal. The third line, I just don't see how that works. I don't see how that there's chemistry there. So, I mean, that's something I just don't, I can't see being a long-term thing. Fourth line, I understand what they're trying to do in terms of trying to create havoc. We talked before, I believe on Saturday's show, about the possibility of moving Adam Lowry to the wing to allow him to take some pressure off him, face-offs, he struggles. He hasn't, you know, created offense really, but you have him being physical, leading the forecheck, as he playing on the boards, things that are his strength. He's certainly aware defensively, so I don't mind that transition, him take some pressure off. That third line is the one I don't see how it works, so I don't know if because of that they keep them all together, but I can see the purpose behind it. And I mean, obviously, you know the first line is the first line, and mm-hmm. you know what you're getting there, so...
Yeah, Thorburn and Ehlers actually had a nice little give and go in the third period there, Thorburn putting it between his legs. But I think I'd agree. I think you'd expect to see Lowry move up to the third line if they're going to keep him at wing and then keep Burmistrov at center. I think that would be the natural progression yeah. for this line. So I'd expect the fourth line to involve Chris Thorburn. But as far as these lines go, I mean, obviously the second line was effective because Drew Stafford and Mark Scheifele each have 3 points, right? And I thought Perreault was really good. They were all driving to the net. They were creating a lot. They had a few chances in addition to the goals they scored. So that line was really good. And, you know, Ladd Little Wheeler has been the top line for this team for 5 years now. So I agree with Rich. You have some concerns about the third and fourth lines, their ability to create offense.
Yeah.
But I think right now I can see Paul Maurice, what he's trying to do. Lowry hasn't scored a goal yet this year, and he's trying to get him going.
Yeah, and I think, you know, on that point, it's more so can those guys play with Ehlers is my real question, is that sure. Can they complement him? But, you know, you also have to deal with the hand that Paul Maurice has been dealt here, and there's only a certain amount of players that he thinks, put you this way, he wants to maximize the production of some players, and I wonder if he almost has to do it at the expense of others based upon who he has on the roster.
You know, in terms of Ehlers, obviously he's fantastically talented. But is he almost too fast for a lot of guys to play with?
I mean, he might be too fast for himself right now. The game will slow down for him eventually. And there are things of his game you don't love, you know, cutting into the middle. Sometimes mm-hmm. with his head down, you saw him get nailed by Spezza. That was not in the middle. But overhandling, doing
Did you have a problem
things.
With that hit, by the way?
I actually thought it was a clean hit. And I thought it was, first of all, it shows you Ehlers is tough, bounces right back. I like that. And, you know, you can just tell, you know, talking to him and seeing him play that he's not somebody to back down.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't have an issue with the hit. I know they got the penalty on the play. The panel didn't think during the game, that was a bad hit. I didn't think it was a bad hit. I mean, Speed's is a big boy. I know he apologized after, but Speed's is a big boy.
Big guy, little guy.
Yeah. And the guy head down and defenseman. I mean, if Speed's is not making that hit, in the Vancouver Canucks, you know, we had Ben Kuzma on Ezzie to talk about Spezza. He's going to come back and be aggressive. They miss that. So if he's not making that hit, what's he doing? So I don't have a huge issue with that hit. I mean, you used to see that hit all the time back then, you know.
Sure.
That's a very common hit. So I think there are far worse problems for the NHL.
It's probably a hit that every coach wants a player to make. In this instance, Spezza gets penalized.
And they score on it.
They score on it. It's on the power play goal. That's the first goal of the game, Scheifele's power play goal. It so happens that Spezza's bigger than Ehlers, and as a result, there's more head contact than probably was intended.
And the truth is, Ehlers got up from it. He seemed to be all right, and he'll learn. That won't happen probably to him very often now. He'll be aware, hey, there could be a pinching, or more so, I know who's on the ice against me. Like, that's a Mark Stewart kind of hit. Offensive blue line. He'll pinch in and make the hit. He likes, you know, kind of go to both blue lines. In neutral zone, really, he likes to be aggressive. But the point is, who's on the ice against me? And I need to be aware of that.
Sure.
And the more you play in the league, the more you become aware of the tendencies of the players that you're playing against.
That one play actually had significant ramifications, I thought, on the entire game. As, of course, you know, Spezza gets penalized, the Jets score. Then he's made to call answer for the hit by fighting Anthony Peluso, right. At which point in time he injures himself during that fight and is out for the rest of the game. And the Canucks defense, I thought, from that point on, looked relatively shaky. I thought they had guys playing more minutes than they wanted to as a result there.
End of a long road trip, too, Drew. That's a factor. And, I mean, Peluso has to fight. That's why he's in the – I mean, Peluso's job is to protect Ehlers, and that's what he has to do. Do I think the NHL needs a fight after what I deem to be a fairly clean hit? Not really, but I don't blame Anthony Peluso for it. I mean, that, again, if he's not doing that in the roster, what's he doing?
Right.
And I don't think Anthony Peluso seeks out Lucas Epiza necessarily because it's a dirty hit. It's just because it's a rookie, right?
That's
so
right.
You're putting the rookie on the ice. So – I had no problem with that fight at all, and I thought Nikolaj Ehlers was pretty strong. And again, you know, he's been demoted to the third line, but by no means should he consider that a demotion, because he's been good. The bounces just haven't been going his way. He's trying to still you know, break his scoring slump, right? So, you know, and to answer your question before, Drew, about whether he's too fast for some of his line mates, he's a really fast player, right? And we know that, and it's tough for anybody to keep up with him in that sense. But I think Burmistrov, you know, it's interesting that they've decided to put Burmistrov at center, because I thought, you know, that line, even though they didn't get anything score-wise, I thought, you know, at times they created well. So I'd expect Lowry, Burmistrov, Ehlers to be a line going forward. But for now, Thorburn is staying on that third line.
And I don't know, and I agree with you, Ezzie, in terms of how that goes, especially left wing, right wing, right, in terms of who plays where. Lowry being a guy who can play natural left wing and Thorburn being a natural right winger. So I agree with Ezzie. Do I think that line even works for Ehlers? Not necessarily. But again, I mean,
You only have so many players.
And you can't just cater your team around one player and all that. So,
speaking of players, the Jets did make a roster move this week, sending Nick Petan down to the Manitoba Moose of the AHL.
Yeah, got an assist last night.
Got an assist last night in the Moose 2-1
the game.
In the 2-1 defeat, right, last night?
Yeah, it was. He assisted on Kitchen's goal.
They lost to Bakersfield 2-1. Of course, the Moose back in action tomorrow afternoon, I believe, at MTS Center against the second game against Bakersfield. Petan gets sent down. The Jets do not make a corresponding call-up, so they do have an open roster spot at the moment. Maybe they're waiting. They've had some injuries with the AHL. Raffle, just maybe getting his legs back under him as he was out of the lineup, and I believe he's back in the lineup for the Moose now, so that might be a move you see coming down in the next couple days, depending on if the Jets want to keep the roster spot open or not.
I mean, it's true that I don't see him keeping it open for long, and they have an aid unless they're making a trade, and we'll talk about that in a bit, but their AHL team is across the hall. So you just snap your fingers, right? It's not like you have to fly them over from St. John now.
No, it isn't easy to certainly call up your guys from the Moose, but it is interesting that they decided to give Petan, I guess they made the determination he wasn't ready and he wasn't going to get ready available minutes in the NHL at this point. Let's send him down to the AHL for at least a little while, get some legs under him.
We talked about it on Wednesday show. I mean, it been brought up and written about on IllegalCurve.com by Pierre Simandis. I mean, the drawbacks to having him really not play in terms of his development, and again, I don't think it's an indictment of his skill level by any means. I think it's just giving him an opportunity, and if you're going to put him in a position to succeed, then the Moose is probably the best spot for him now. I mean, having said that, I can see people having issues with still him not playing and Peluso playing.
Mm-hmm.
I realize you're talking about different positions and different roles, but I can see what people are saying there. But long term, I think it makes sense. Even for a little while here, just to let him play, get his legs under him, build his confidence. And obviously, as he was at the game last night, you're seeing a guy who, from what I read, certainly carried the puck and played a pretty confident game.
Yeah, he was good in his first game with the Moose. And as we said, it's better that he's playing 15, 20 minutes a game as opposed to not playing at all.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to preview tonight's Jets-Coyotes matchup at MTS Center. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Jets get it, go D to D, and Enstrom will dump it inside with a slap shot to go wild. Karen, here's Wheeler, a shot, he scores!
Wow. Will Mike Smith want that one back? Is it game one? Ask the Coyote netminder.
Blake Wheeler scoring on the Arizona Coyotes last season. Jets fans hope to see more of the same tonight as the Jets and former Jets do battle at MTS Center. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Tonight's opponent for the Winnipeg Jets, the Arizona Coyotes, come into the game with a record that I think most people would say they were certainly surprised about, 19 games into the regular season. 10-8-1 for the Coyotes, placing them third in the Pacific Division, and if the playoffs were to start today, they would be a playoff team, which I think it's safe to say nobody expected. Coyotes 5-5 in their last 10. They're at the last game of a four-game road trip. They were victorious on Thursday night in Montreal against the Canadiens. This Coyotes team certainly playing above their head, which I think speaks a lot to Dave Tippett, and he's a fantastic coach, and we may have forgotten about that a little bit over the last couple years as the Coyotes struggled, but they got some precocious players, some youth as well, specifically Max Domi and Anthony Duclair, who have been absolutely terrific for the Coyotes early on in their rookie years, gentlemen.
Yeah, it's surprising to me that the Arizona Coyotes are doing as well as they have, but not so surprising because they're a very well-coached team. We know that. Dave Tippett, he's a former coach of the year in the NHL. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, bona fide top 10 defenseman. Mike Smith, even though he struggled over the last couple years, he's an excellent number one goalie for the Coyotes. And as you mentioned, Drew, they've got this infusion of youth, and I think they're really riding it. Plus, they've got good leadership with Shane Doan and Antoine Vermette. I know Antoine Vermette is struggling right now, but they're still a much better team than they were last year. Zdeněk Mihalák is another guy they brought back after trading him to St. Louis at the trade deadline last year. So this is still a team that, that works their butts off, Drew. And you see that with this group. They don't have maybe one or two players that, that you necessarily have to shut down, even though I'd argue that Max Domi, Duclair, Martin Hansel right now, some of these guys, you have to shut these guys down. They're good players, but just meaning they don't have to shut down like a Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin type of line. So it's been nice to see this team really defy their early season expectations. As we know, that Pacific Division is not very good right now. And, you know, there's a chance that this team, even though we thought they'd be one of the bottom teams in the NHL, there's still a chance, realistic chance, this team could be a playoff team.
Surprise team, Drew. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. And as he talks about some of the qualities of the squad, and you look at the team and you look at the division there, and you say, whoa, you know, third place even now. Of course, you're a point out of being in fourth, and you're close to being, you know, kind of out of the playoffs quickly. Still been a pretty impressive run, only -3 in the goal differential, and a team that Don Maloney, who we'll talk to later in the show, came into the season saying, you know, the veterans need to carry the load and need to ensure that they protect the young players. The young players really come in and surprised. And so, great sign for the future, and they have guys, you know, in the system that they think highly of. And Sean Burke, and we'll ask Don Maloney, but Sean Burke came on the show last year, who's not with the team anymore, and talked about the lack of solid drafting and the reason, one of the reasons why the team has failed the past couple of years. I think that's changed a bit. I think they have some young players on the team now and some young players coming through the system. That's via draft and trade for Keith Yandel, and they have two first-round picks this year. So I think things are looking up for the Coyotes, but they're not maybe at the high level they were, you know, two weeks ago or so, and I think this is a more realistic spot for them, and they probably still will fade a bit, but it has been an impressive quarter start to the quarter of the season.
Yeah, you mentioned their draft picks, Richie. Dylan Strome right now is absolutely tearing up the OHL.
For sure.
He's averaging well over a point a game. So when you consider that those three players are going to be part of the core of this team going forward, there's something to look forward to in Arizona, and there hasn't been something to look forward to. Before the trade deadline last year, the Coyotes started the fire sale. They traded Keith Yandel to the Rangers, which allowed them to get Anthony Duclair. They move Zdeněk Mihalák. They lose Antoine Vermette to the Chicago Blackhawks. They get a first-rounder for Antoine Vermette. And you can see that now they've decided that they can build this team back up through the draft, and they've done a great job. And Max Domi right now is an early Calder candidate, early Calder favorite, I would argue, especially with Connor McDavid out. So there's a lot to look forward to in Arizona, and sure, there's always issues with the arena and ownership, but this team is competitive on a nightly basis, Drew, and last year they were not competitive on a nightly basis. Last year was one of the worst years, I think, in a long time for any NHL team, because this team was, especially after the trade deadline, I mean, they just didn't have enough players to be competitive on a nightly basis, and that's why you saw them finish second last in the NHL.
We mentioned Duclair and we mentioned Domi. Truthfully, they're actually being led in points by Martin Hansel, and he's got 18 points in 17 games so far this year. You know, Hansel's a guy that really doesn't get any notice at all throughout the NHL, but he's a pretty damn good player and, you know, underrated, I would argue, for what he does for this Coyotes team.
Yeah, I mentioned Hansel earlier, but Martin Hansel is a guy who I think is appreciated more so for his two-way play. And you're right, he's a good offensive player. He had a career high in points, I believe, last year with 40. So he's not a guy that is ever going to be top 10, top 20 in the NHL in scoring, but he's a big, solid player. He's big, and they put him out in all situations, Drew. And he's been on the Coyotes now for many years. He's been a staple of that team along with, you know, Mikael Bodker and Shane Doan and players like that. And you're right, he's been very good this year playing on a line with Anthony Duclair. And I agree with you. I think he is underrated.
Thing about Hansel is that, you know, as he talks about, you can rely on him in all situations. He's not a great skater, so if you insulate him with some speed on the outside and some skill, then you're going to complement his game. He's going to be able to take pressure off young players. Why? Because he can defend and he can lean on you, and he's a big guy. So when you have young players, it takes away some of their defensive responsibility. They're aware they can take some risks up the ice, and he doesn't have bad skill by any means. Sometimes he has trouble keeping up, but I think he's a good player. Do I think he's a first-line center? No. But he's been very successful to start the season, and you have to give him credit.
Coyotes don't do anything overly well in terms of scoring goals. If you look at them over the course of the, in the in terms of the entire NHL. They're 15th in goals for with 53. Give up a lot of goals, which is unusual for a Phoenix Coyotes Dave Tippett coach team. Sorry, I'm going to do that. You know what? I don't call it NHL midweek. I'm pretty good at calling it NHL this week, but I'm going to keep calling them the Phoenix Coyotes. That's my problem. 25th in goals against with 56 goals against. Power play struggling, 29th on the power play so far. Penalty kill a little bit better with 12th in the NHL.
Well, I mean, let's be real here and talk about the fact that their defense isn't very good on paper, and their overall team skill, Ezzy, is not that great. Power play probably going to take a hit there. So, I mean, I think when we're talking about encouraging signs for the Arizona Coyotes, we're talking about for the long haul. This season, again, they've surprised at the quarter pull. I don't think, Ezzy, I think you probably agree, we don't think it's going to continue. But if you see development of the young players, then I think you consider that to be a positive sign. And you mentioned, you know, the system that they have, and of course Dylan Strome being that guy. I mean, they do have other guys too, but that's not a concern to the Jets tonight, because, you know, they don't care about the Nick Merkleys and Brendan Perlinis who are coming through. Tonight is a game where, you know, you're playing against a lot of guys who are still fringe NHL players.
Yeah, Nick Merkley was the player they drafted with the Antoine Vermette pick. But you're right, Richie. I think the most important thing, you know, for Jets fans that are going to watch this team tonight, Drew, is that you're going to see an Arizona Coyotes team that's similar to the team that went to the Western Conference Final in 2012. It's a hardworking team. They're not going to, you know, dazzle you with flash and all of that. But it's a team that will be competitive and won't be outworked on most nights. That has been a staple of Dave Tippett teams going back to when he was a coach with Dallas, and even as an assistant coach. That's the type of player Dave Tippett is. And I think Dave Tippett is a guy who many thought might lose his job, even though he has 3 years left on his contract. I think some people were wondering, well, what's going on? Has Dave Tippett kind of lost his magic? He's been kind of a guy who's always kind of really been the identity of the Arizona Coyotes, or I should say the team kind of, you know, reflects him as the type of player he was. But, you know, you have players like Kyle Chipchura and Boyd Gordon, you know, guys like that that work hard, Brad Richardson, these types of players. You know, it's a team that it's not an easy win over the Arizona Coyotes anymore. And especially with guys like Domi and Duclair coming in, helping out guys like Martin Hansel and Bodker, who have been responsible for a lot of the team's offense over the last couple of years, especially that you've traded away certain players. We expected Shane Doan to possibly be traded a couple of years back, but then he signed the 4-year deal. So it's, you know, Richie mentions the defense. Sure, after Ekman Larson and Michael Stone, your top pair, and Mahalik, you know, it's not the strongest group of defensemen, but Mike Smith is able to bail them out a lot of the time. So it's a team that this year, I think, it's impressive what they've done with this group. They've been competitive, and they've even upset some teams.
Coyotes aren't skating today, so we won't know about their starting lineup as to who's going to be in goal. We imagine it's going to be Mike Smith, but we won't know that for sure until later on this afternoon. The Jets' speed, is that an area that they're going to look to take advantage of against the Coyotes in today's game, especially with the Coyotes' defense?
Yeah, Drew, I mean, you're going to want to take it. I mean, just the Coyotes' defense in general isn't very good. I think that the Coyotes made a decision over the offseason to improve team speed, which they have. So I think even last year they would have been more vulnerable to speed than they are this year. But yeah, that's a part of the game the Jets are going to take advantage of. You've seen Paul Maurice utilize Scheifele against, you know, his line, whoever's playing with them, against weaker competition. Today's an easier opportunity to do that. Why? You're at home. One, two, the Oliver Ekman-Larsson can only play against one line, and you'd assume that likely be against the little line. So you're going to have some opportunity to take advantage of some players on the bottom pairings, which we'll ask Tyson Nash about, who, you know, may not be getting a lot of respect, but at the same time, they aren't, you know, top-end guys. So the Jets, I'd expect the Jets to be able to create a lot of chances tonight.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Tyson Nash. He's the Phoenix Coyotes, the Arizona Coyotes color analyst. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 12:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. I think we're having a couple of technical difficulties, so we're going to keep working on that in order to bring Tyson Nash onto the program.
We were so excited we came on at 11:57, 3 minutes early today.
It's been one of those days, I think, so far where, you know, technology may not be our friends to this point in time, but...
I'm your friend, though, Drew.
I appreciate you being my friend, Izzy, and I appreciate you're playing hurt today. You got a little bit of the sniffles, eh? I like the deep, hoarse voice you're coming with, though. It sounds good for radio.
I don't wish this upon my worst enemy, because when you have the sniffles...
But Drew's your worst enemy.
When you're sitting there and you've got the Kleenex, and that's kind of what my night was. Richie mentioned I went to the Moose game last night, and I was up there with a handful of Kleenex. It was a great game, but unfortunately, I had the drips, so... Yeah, I'm a little bit sick, but I wouldn't miss this show for the world, Drew.
We appreciate that, as in I'm sure everyone in the press box last night appreciated you making them potentially sick as well. But way to take one for the team all around there. How are we doing on getting the – we're going to get Tyson. Tyson, are you there? Tyson, are you there? Nope, we're still working on getting Tyson Nash onto the program. We'll get these technical difficulties worked out any minute now here. Anyways, second game of the Jets homestand tonight against the Arizona Coyotes. Should be as we said, you know, on Tuesday's NHL This Week program, we said these are three games the Jets should win.
Mm-hmm.
Where they took care of business Wednesday against Vancouver, tonight against Arizona, and you got Monday coming up against Colorado. You know, three teams that you would have thought at the beginning of the season you were going to be better than. And Jets took care of business on Wednesday. Now they got to keep it going tonight, or it's, you know, one step forward, two steps back for this team.
Yeah, that's right. And even though the Arizona Coyotes, you'd look at and you'd say on paper, whether it's on defense or whether it's those bottom lines, the Jets have the advantage. But as we mentioned, this is a team that has improved a lot last year, and it's not the team from last year, which was an easy win. So the Jets have got to play similarly to the way they played against the Vancouver Canucks, but even better. As Richie mentioned, I didn't think it was a flawless game for the Jets by any stretch of the imagination. I thought at times they were giving the neutral zone a little bit too easily to the Vancouver Canucks, and that resulted in them having to take some penalties. You saw Tobias Enstrom take a penalty, and he was in the penalty box when Daniel Sedin scored the goal for the Vancouver Canucks. But you're right. I mean, they got to take this game because of the way they played on the road trip. They came back from that Central Division road trip with no points, Drew, and they have to make hay here at home. They got to beat the Coyotes, and they got to beat the Avalanche. It's not going to get easier for this team. They got to keep it going and keep picking up points to make up for the lack of points they got on that road trip.
I think we are now joined by Tyson Nash. Tyson, are you there?
Hi, I'm here, boys. Sorry about that. Not sure what's going on.
Not your fault at all. It's our technology that's a little bit antiquated. But whatever, we brought you on, and that's all that matters. Tyson, appreciate you joining us. Tyson, of course, is the Arizona Coyotes color analyst on Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, before we brought you on, we were talking about the Coyotes and really want to start with Max Domi and Anthony Duclair. They performed so admirably to start the season, both of them rookies here in the NHL. Can you describe their respective games and what makes them just so good for this Coyotes team?
Well, that makes us both excited. I mean, these guys, and I think the big thing that stood out to me was we played Columbus the other day, and John Tortorella was talking in his press conference about getting prepared to play the skilled and speedy Arizona Coyotes. We haven't heard that in years. Here in Arizona, and I think it's a direct result because of some of this young talent that we have, and those two young guys are leading the way. I knew they were going to be good. I've watched them in junior, you know, I watched them in training camp. I just didn't know they were going to be this good and dominate the way they have against NHL players. And you know, you think of Duclair, and he's a real good complementary player. I don't think he's a guy that goes out there and really dictates the game like a Max Domi, but he's an opportunist. This is a guy that gets a chance to score, and it's in the back of the net. I think he's got a 26% shooting percentage, which is incredible considering we're as deep into the season as we are. You know, he just has that ability to find pucks and score when it's on a stick and finish plays. And Max is a guy that he generates everything. I think as analysts, we use the term explosive way too much. But I think Max Domi epitomizes what explosive skating and power is all about. I mean, this guy just makes defensemen look absolutely silly. you cannot be prepared for the speed that Max Domi has. You know, there's a couple ways to intimidate. Physically is not how the Coyotes intimidate, but with their speed and newfound skill, that's how they get it done.
Tyson, last segment we were talking about Marty Hanzel, and if you look at the scoring leaders for the Coyotes, he's at the top of that list, 18 points in 17 games. He's top 20 in the NHL in scoring right now, had a career-high 40 points last year. For a guy who's known more as a two-way forward, more kind of as a defensive shutdown forward, what has led to his terrific production over the last couple of years?
I think Tobias Reeder and Anthony DeClaire, those are his two wingers right now. And you know, Martin Hansel, he's a big guy, 6'6". He's that big shutdown centerman that you need in the Pacific Division. So that's first and foremost where, you know, he earns his money. But I think he's had such a great start because of these young kids and the speed. He's not the guy that has to go into the corner and win all those battles all the time. He's got those guys flying in there and getting the puck and just throwing it to the front of the net. And, you know, with that big frame of his, he's not going to lose many battles in front of the goaltender, and that's where he gets a lot of his points, a lot of his goals, the power play as well. He's also healthy. That's the big thing. I think if you look at the games that he's played and should have played if he was able to stay healthy, he's missing a bunch. And he's healthy. He had that back surgery, once and for all, and I think that's been the biggest thing for Hamill.
Sorry, Tyson, I meant to say 2 years ago he had a career-high 40 points. He only played 37 games last year.
Well, 40 points, 37 games would have been pretty good. But Tyson, you see Oliver Ekman-Larsson on a daily basis, and we get to see him obviously occasionally on TV and then coming through town. But if you had to rank, putting you on the spot a bit here, but if you had to rank him amongst all NHL defensemen, like, what are we talking about here? Top 15, top 10, top 6 or 7, top 5?
I'm going top 5, and I think there'd be a lot of people that would agree with me. Maybe not so much, in the hockey world, but I think if you ask any of the players that play against him and play with him, there's no doubt that's how good this guy is. Players know players, and you know, obviously Arizona doesn't get a lot of credibility and a lot of exposure because of where we are in the market that we're in. But this guy is a special, special player. I mean, you guys watch him tonight. Just watch how efficient he is. He never gets beat. He never gets out of position. And as physical as Winnipeg is, they just will not be able to get a lick on him. And that's why we make comparisons to a guy like Nicklas Lidström. Probably not fair as of yet, although he did have 23 goals last year, which Lidström has never had in his career in a season. But it's just how he plays. You know, the game plan is go out there and run this guy through the board. Take away his time and space. Every time he touches it, make sure you tenderize him a little bit, and he'll cough it up. Well, it doesn't happen because he's so much farther ahead of the game than the forwards trying to bear down on him. So he's a special guy, special player, and he'll win his fair share of Norris's as his career continues.
Tyson Nash is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tyson is the Arizona Coyotes color analyst on Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, last year, Don Maloney, you know, he was pretty honest in coming out and stating that a lot of Mike Smith's troubles in goal were probably a result of the Coyotes' defense in front of him and that they may have received too much attention on their own. Do you agree with that perspective of GM Don Maloney, and how have the Coyotes differed in their defensive play this season as compared to last?
Well, I will agree with him in the fact that I think they definitely go hand in hand. I 100% agree with that. I mean, some of the scoring chances that we've given up in the last 2 years, in front of Mike Smith is just it's just not acceptable, and that's why this team wanted to play better defensively. They don't have the big horses. They don't have superstars yet, but they have to play tight defense. That's winning hockey in the NHL. And there were games where the Coyotes just left Mike Smith out to dry. But that being said, there are situations and times in the game that you needed that big save to have it 2-0 or 2-1, and you need to make that big save so it doesn't go to 3-0 or 3-1, because that was just death for the Coyotes because of their lack of offense last year. But Mike Smith wasn't making those saves. He wasn't. He was leaking oil. He's been leaking oil. He'll tell you that himself the last 2 years, and that's why he's gone out there and he's left no stone unturned. He's got a sports psychologist. He's He's got his new goalie coach that he used since he was 12 years old, hired by the Coyotes full-time now. And it shows in his game. But even this year, there's moments where he is the best goalie in the league. And then there's moments where, you know, he has some issues and he struggles. So it's just about that consistency right now. And he played one of his best games the other night against the Montreal Canadiens. So hopefully he can put that again together tonight.
Yeah, Tyson, we tried to hire a sports psychologist, but he wanted no part of a legal curve. So after Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Michael Stone and Zdeněk Mihalák, who obviously came back after being traded to St. Louis, this Coyotes defense, a lot of people know about this Coyotes defense, especially some of the younger guys like Phil Samuelson, Klaus Dahlbeck. I know Dahlbeck has played every game this year, but Samuelson's only gone into a couple of games. What can you tell us about these two defensemen?
Well, they're great. I Dahlbeck's been a real big surprise for me. In his overall game, offensively, he's showing his offensive instincts. He's a hard guy to play against. He's mean. He'll whack you. He'll hack you. And that's the big thing that the Coyotes want, to be a harder team to play against, harder to go stand in front of the goaltender Mike Smith. And they're big bodies too. Both those kids are big guys that can move guys from the front of the net to allow the goaltender to see those shots. And that's the biggest thing when you're a defenseman. You have to make sure that you can get to those second pucks after rebounds and clear those bodies. So Samuelson, I would love to see him get some more action up here. I think he's done his time in the American League. I think he's definitely an NHL defenseman. I think he just needs some time to develop at this level. He plays a lot like his old man does. He's got some bite to his game. He's a little bit dirty, which I like, and players hate to play against guys like that.
Yeah, definitely like his old man. Speaking of an old man, respectively, of course, Shane Doan, Tyson, has obviously been a lifer for the organization, and is he still the clear leader of the team, or are you starting to see a bit of a changing of the guard with Doan knowing that, you know, he's on the final parts of his career and some of the other young guys need to, maybe younger veterans, I should say, need to kind of take the reins?
No, he is absolutely the leader. He's the best leader in the NHL, if you ask me. He's won the Mark Messier Trophy, been nominated a few other times as well because of it. Everyone knows it. Everyone looks to Shane, and yeah, he may be slowing down offensively, although he's got 5 goals now this year again. His ice time is dipped, but he is the leader, and he leads because he goes out there and leads by example on the ice, most importantly. He also says and the right things in the locker room, and he lives the right way in his life away from the rink. So if you're a young kid, you are very, very lucky if you're in that Arizona Coyotes locker room to be learning and watching Shane Doan lead this team, because he is the perfect example. What Shane Doan has as a person is, you know, I look at him and you look at how happy he is and how he lives his life. You want what he has, and that says a lot.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Tyson Nash. Tyson is the Arizona Coyotes color analyst on Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, he came back to the Coyotes after being traded away last season. That's Antoine Vermette. He went to Chicago, of course. He won the Stanley Cup. He re-signs in Arizona, yet he's only got 2 assists in 13 games so far this season. What accounts for his struggles thus far this year?
Well, and he had both those assists in the same game. I think he's been banged up. He had one heck of a consecutive game streak going, one on the top in the NHL. I think he was second behind Cogliano, who's still rolling along. But he had a lower body injury. I believe it was a groin, and I think he's struggled out of the gate. He tried to play through that injury, and as we all know, coaches don't know that you played hurt. They just remember how you played, and it has been a struggle for Antoine Vermette. Offensively and just in his overall play, he's still able to be great in the face-off circle, which has still been very, very important. But he's such a professional. You know he's going to work his way out of it. He's still got lots left. That's why the Coyotes signed him to a 2-year deal. He's definitely fighting it right now, but he just needs one, and he's a very streaky guy. So as we all know, all of a sudden you get one and you got 5 or 6 coming shortly after.
Tyson, the Coyotes made a swap earlier this season, sending former first-rounder Brandon Gormley to Colorado for Stephen Elliott. And I know that Elliott didn't play last game against Montreal, mm-hmm. but what have your thoughts been on Stephen Elliott so far with the Coyotes?
I like him. I do. He's that offensive guy that the Coyotes are lacking. You know, the loss of Keke Yandle. I think Elliott was always playing behind Tyson Barrie in Colorado, so that's kind of why he became expendable. And you also can only have a certain amount of those guys on your blue line. You need those steady Eddies back there to kind of calm things down, but you need guys that can make plays and make plays out of the zone and help out on the power play and in situations where you may need a goal late in the game. And that's where Elliott's going to come in. But he's just finding his way. He's trying to earn the trust of the coach right now. Dave Tippett doesn't just, you know, inject a young kid into the lineup and play him 20, 25 minutes. You got to earn your stripes here in Arizona. And he's finding his way, but he's just got to bide his time and be patient.
Final question for you, Tyson, and we're kind of breaking down this team. You're giving us good insight into a lot of players we haven't seen a lot of. Jordan Martinuk would be another one of those players. You know, he adds speed to a team, and Don Maloney noted that that was something he wanted to improve over the offseason. How has he fared so far?
You know what? Really, really good. And he is a guy, I talked about trust, that has earned the trust of Dave Tippett slowly. But he's been put in some monster situations. When the Coyotes are trying to close out a game, you'll often, you know, see Martinuk out there on the ice trying to protect the lead, big penalty kills. He's the first guy over the boards. And that's a testament to him and the work that he's put in. He spent some time in the American League. He's developed. He's learned how to be a good pro. And it showed. And I think the big thing with Martinuk is, as you said, his speed. And he competes and he battles. But he does have some offensive upside as well. But that takes time. And, again, you have to earn that. Right now he's a third, fourth liner. And, you know, as you, again, earn the trust of the coach, you may see a little bit of power play time. If you continue to make good plays and good decisions on the ice, the coach has no choice but to reward you.
Tyson Nash is the Arizona Coyotes color analyst on Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, always appreciate your time and insights into the Coyotes, and have a great call for tonight's Jets-Coyotes game at MTS Center.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Tyson. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we talk about some of the contract statuses of the Winnipeg Jets players.
Bounced off the wall, came out to center, picked up by Wheeler. Back across the line, center, out in front. They score! Austin Bufflin takes the pass and just redirects it over the shoulder of Smith from Wheeler in transition. And the Jets have opened up a four-goal lead. It's 5-1 after killing the penalty off.
Dustin Bufflin scoring for the Winnipeg Jets against the Arizona Coyotes in a game earlier last year. This segment brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
I got to say, I always love having Tyson Nash on.
Mm-hmm.
He was a tough player when he played with, whether it was the Coyotes or the Blues before that. A lot of people don't know this. He actually won the Memorial Cup 3 times with the Kamloops Blazers, which is, I don't know if that's a record, but you don't see one player win a Memorial Cup that many times, usually.
Sure. Yeah,
most players only win it once. So love having him on. He's always great.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you missed any of that interview with Tyson Nash, we'll have it for you on illegalcurve.com and, of course, on tsn1290.ca. And while you're at it, just subscribe to the program on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to you each and every week. We just played a clip from Dustin Bufflin scoring a goal last year. Dustin Bufflin, of course, does not have a contract for the upcoming season.
Really?
Truly. I know it's news. But, you know, with Bufflin and with Andrew Ladd, you know, still absolutely no news, still absolutely no chatter whatsoever regarding their contract statuses for the 2016-17 season. Are we getting close to the point in time where these players are just going to pretty much shrug their shoulders and say, you know, I'm going to see what the open market bears for me at this point? Do you think it's beginning to weigh on the players or have an impact in the dressing room as these guys continue to be without a contract for next year?
I think it's tough. I mean, I think if you're talking about five players, you're talking about Ladd, Bufflin, Lowry, Trouba, and Hutchinson.
Lowry, Trouba, and Hutchinson, all of whom are RFAs.
I think that it has to be a factor here. I mean, Trouba's played his worst hockey probably as a Winnipeg Jet thus far. I would be very surprising, and this is just guessing, but I think educated guess, I'd be very surprised if he wasn't affected in some way by possibly looking for a long-term deal with big numbers. Adam Lowry hasn't scored. Is that just because he's been snake bin and just random that he has a possible contract extension upcoming? It may be a coincidence. It may not be. And Hutchinson, maybe less so of the five, but Bufflin and Ladd, I mean, Ladd certainly played better. I know he's coming off injury and such, but I just can't see how this isn't a factor. And I mean, there are a phase or less of a concern from the team point of perspective because you're not risking losing them. And I know the losing streak is focused on, or the losing streak previous to the Vancouver game focused the team on, getting out of it, as opposed to maybe other distractions that come to be. I think the longer you go, the more it becomes a distraction. I just can't see it not being a distraction. A double negative there, but it's too real of a possibility. And for the Jets, I mean, you can't. You want to think, we've talked about this on the air continually over the many months. You can't go into the deadline with both of them unsigned. I mean, even one of them unsigned is very risky, but both of them unsigned is, I mean, incomprehensible, frankly.
And Richie, you would think that there's less of a distraction for Jacob Trouba, Adam Lowry, and Michael Hutchinson just because they're RFAs. They know with pretty good certainty that they're going to be with the Winnipeg Jets next year, as opposed to Andrew Ladd and Dustin Bufflin.
Can I interrupt you for 1 second there, Izzy? Are you so sure about Michael Hutchinson being with the Winnipeg Jets next year? You know, Connor Hellebuck, you know, that'll be his second year complete in the AHL. Doesn't he at some point?
Yeah, but I don't know, that's a contract, much as just in general. He'll be playing for whatever. I mean, he'll be playing for his job. I mean, he's not going to be a guy who's earned a long-term extension. I don't think he even thinks he's going to get one this year.
You're talking about Michael Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be. But I'm not sure. I mean, that's the problem. We've spoken about this on air before. It's a problem with goaltenders. You can only play one at a time. So the Jets organization, which right now seems to have at least three. I don't know yet enough about Eric Comrie, but he should be an NHL goaltender, but he's still a couple years away probably. Next year, it would be not unreasonable that the Jets would have three NHL-caliber goaltenders on their roster and maybe under contract. And, you know, that could create a little bit of a logjam and maybe weigh on Michael Hutchinson or something.
Point well taken.
Thank you.
I agree with what you're saying. I think I would say Lowry and Trouba more so than Hutchinson.
Certainly.
How about that?
I'm good with that.
Lowry and Trouba more so know that unless they get traded, which there's no indication they will be traded and they shouldn't be traded, in my opinion, they'll be on the Jets next year. It just depends if they're going to get a two-year contract or a longer-term contract, right, Richie? As far as Ladd and Bufflin go, we have absolutely no idea what's happening with these two players. I said this at the time after the draft, getting back from Florida after the draft. I thought Ladd's contract was going to be done in early July, and Lawless said the same thing. I remember him talking about it at the draft. Bufflin, a little bit trickier, right? Because of the fact that we assume or we're told that the Winnipeg Jets probably want to sign Bufflin to 4 or 5 years as opposed to 6 or 7 years, which they might give Ladd, right? But again, this is all in flux. We don't know how many years these players are ultimately going to be signed to, right? That's probably why they're not signed already. And to Richie's point, earlier in the season, it's not much a distraction. You're coming out of training camp. Everything's new. Everything's fresh. Everybody's just trying to get into the groove of the season, right? It's not that much of a distraction. But as Rich mentioned earlier in the season, how can it not be a distraction as you get into January, closer to the trade deadline, and all of a sudden you still don't have a contract? By the way, there's still a chance that Andrew Ladd or Dustin Bufflin is signed. I still think that this one of these contracts could be announced and nobody's expecting it. Because we aren't in the room. We aren't in there with Chevy and Larry Simmons and these guys. We don't know how much they've talked because that's private, right? So a contract extension could be announced in the next week, next month, whatever. But the point is, the further you get into the season, then you get midway through the season into January, and the player isn't certain if he's going to be there. So, you know, it's
well, I mean,
how
it's
can
also
it
the
not
fact,
be a distraction?
It's also the, and for the older, and the younger players are probably less suited to the, they're less able to deal with the distractions because they have a lack of experience. The older players are more able to deal with the distraction, but they also are more likely to have families and therefore have other people asking them questions. So, I mean, these are people. I mean, forget, take out the fact that these people make millions and millions of dollars.
And for Ladd
sport,
and Buff, Richie, sorry to cut you off, Ladd and Buff, this is going to be their last huge contract.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? They're not looking for a 2-year deal. Trouba could sign a bridge contract. Lowry could sign a bridge contract. But Ladd and Byfuglien are looking for 4 to 6 years each, maybe even 7.
And they're close to 30 years old, and they're wanting, exactly, as you know, they're looking for that big contract. They're also looking to settle down and then with their families as well. So, I mean, you don't think that their significant other is saying, where are we going to live next year? You don't think that comes up?
Oh, it certainly would.
This is a reality of the situation. So, I mean, that uncertainty has to be weighing on somehow. Now, conversely, you'd say, okay, well, they would want to just shoot the lights out because they know the money will be bigger, or they expect it to be bigger if they perform better. So, I mean, there's that argument as well. I just think you certainly cannot discount the fact that for these five guys on varying levels, this is a distraction. And therefore, it's a distraction for the team, because if it distracts the player, then it takes away from possibly what the team can accomplish.
Family issues have resulted in Travis Hamonic asking for a trade. We'll talk about that next in the second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
We're just getting started.
That's right. Drew Mundell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time, NHL Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations Chris King is going to join us. We'll talk about goalie equipment and video review and everything else under the sun. And, you know, maybe Chris knows how to increase scoring, which is apparently the only issue the NHL needs to worry about.
Got to talk to him about Ty as well.
That's right.
He's got a new book out.
He does. Travis Hamonic of the New York Islanders earlier this week came public that he had asked for a trade out of New York, out of Brooklyn, and he wanted to be closer to home. Home, of course, is St. Malo, Manitoba. So Travis Hamonic has been linked now to the Winnipeg Jets as a result of that trade demand becoming public. First of all, let's talk about Travis Hamonic as a player.
Yep.
You know, he's got, everyone says, speaks very highly of him. Certainly a top four guy or a top two guy?
I think he's a top two guy. And I think maybe offensively you'd say the numbers aren't there, guys. But I think he's a prototypical shutdown defenseman. He's certainly, Richie, a number one pairing defenseman for the New York Islanders, and has been. You look at his minutes. He plays 22, 24 minutes a game. Not as many as maybe a Ryan Suter or a Drew Doughty, but he's right up there, top 20 in the NHL and in time on ice for sure. So I think he's a top pairing defenseman, absolutely, Drew. And, you know, I don't think Travis Hamonic, I think he would tell you this himself, I don't think, you know, he's ever going to lead NHL defensemen in scoring, certainly as long as Erik Karlsson and PK Subban are putting up those numbers. But he's a very smart defenseman, a physical defenseman. He has a mean streak in him, not dirty, obviously, but you remember he had some good battles with Evander Kane a couple of years ago when Kane was still with the Jets. He's a guy that was considered for the 2014 Olympic team. He was invited to the camp to make Team Canada. So, I mean, that's how highly regarded he is, certainly among Hockey Canada. And watching him over the years, I mean, we talked about it going into the playoffs last year against the Capitals. What would that series have looked like if Travis Hamonic was able to shut down Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom, right?
He didn't play in that series due to injury.
Right, he was injured towards the end of the season last year. And I think that was a huge advantage, Richie, for Barry Trotz and the Capitals, because he has that ability. And I think, you know, we'll get into the trade possibilities later. Mm-hmm. But because he has that ability, I think many teams in the NHL are going to be calling Garth Snow to see if they can acquire him.
I mean, Drew, your question about top four or top two, it's an interesting question. I'd agree with Ezzy in that I think he's a top two. Why? Because he can play with the left side guy, ideally who can move the puck. Right now, he's lined up with Nicoletti, who fits that description. He is a shutdown right side defenseman. He'll get you, you know, 20 to 30 points, but he's not so offensively inclined. That's not a strength of his game. The strength of his game is in playing a good shutdown defensive game. He's physical. He's willing to sacrifice his body. He will get into the dirty areas. He's hard to play against. I think that's a description. You know, is he going to be the most creative offensively, creative offensive guy? No, but you don't want to play against a guy like Travis Hamonic, and you feel it after the game. And he's a heart and soul guy. He's liked by his teammates, good in the room. I mean, all the qualities you want. And kind of, they talk about glue guy, but a glue guy can also play. So yeah, you know, he fits into your top four easily. You don't want him on your top power play unit. But you basically want him everywhere else.
You want to? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
You know, any notable drawbacks to his game that sort of jump out at you when you watch him play?
I mean, not really. I mean, I don't see any significant parts to his game that I don't like. Again, I mean, if it's a offensive game that you're looking for, you're not necessarily going to get that. So maybe that's the one thing in a puck moving game, but he can still keep up and play against those types of players. So I don't think that's something. There's not real significant drawbacks. And truthfully, when he signed to my mind, quite a ridiculous deal. We said it on the air when he signed it. Like, this is a ridiculous bargain. The Islanders are known for the bargain deals. Drew, I can outline the contract. It's,
yeah.
He's got, what, how many more years?
He's got 4 more years after this one on the deal. The salary cap hit is 3.85 per year. His actual salary jumps next year to 4.875 per season.
So 3.8 per year is what you're talking about books-wise on the cap. I mean, it doesn't even matter that he's not giving you the top-end offense because he's getting paid an amount that's really not commensurate with the value that he provides, in my opinion. So you're getting a great deal. That's why he's so sought after. I mean, if he was making 5.5 or 6, he wouldn't necessarily take big issue with it, if in an issue at all, but it would limit, or at least limit the teams that would be involved in trying to acquire him. Now, it's already limited based upon the fact that he wants to play closer to Winnipeg, and it was maybe Western Canada. Now it's maybe a direct flight to Winnipeg, and there's certain factors here. We don't know what they are, and frankly, we don't need to know what they are. But this is a sought-after guy, and everybody would call before they knew about the restrictions, which is only reason he's available. Every GM, all 29, would call.
Drew, Hamonic is 26th in the NHL in ice time, 23 minutes and 26 seconds. Above him, you've got Brent Seabrook, Andy Green, Alex Goligoski, Jay Bouwmeester, Mark Giordano. I mean, these are all top defensemen. He played 25 minutes last night versus Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that can
got
play.
A goal.
He did score. If you can play that many minutes consistently night in, night out basis, then you're in a rare group of defensemen. You're basically playing half of the game, right? And this is a guy, I agree with Richie. He's not necessarily a guy who's going to be on the score sheet every night, but other players don't like to play against him. And that's really what a defenseman's role should be, if you think about it. Sure, you'd like your defenseman to contribute. And he had a career-high 33 points last year, and those points will come. Is he distracted maybe a little bit by what's going on in his personal life? Maybe. Have the bounces maybe just not been there? Sure. The Islanders have other guys that can contribute offensively. Nick Leddy, Johnny Boychuk. They've got other defensemen there, but Hamonic, you're talking about a guy I believe that 29 other teams would want on their roster. And, you know, you hear about the Western Canadian teams, including Winnipeg,
for sure,
being where he wants to go. And that's obvious because, as you mentioned, he's from St. Malo. But we hear, you know, from Darren Dreger and the insiders that it's possible other teams are going to be interested as well. It's because of what he offers, Richie. He can really play in all types of situations. Is he necessarily going to quarterback your power play? No. But he's an excellent skater, can move the puck. He's physical, smart. He's a leader. We've seen that over the years on the Islanders. He's a leader in that dressing room. And I think that's why when you heard him speak to the media the other day, Drew, I think that's why you could see that he was so choked up about it. Because I truly believe him. I don't think he wants to leave the Islanders. I think he likes playing on Long Island, or I guess Brooklyn now. But because of this situation that's come up with his family, he wants to be closer to home. I think it's been very difficult for him to have to ask for a trade.
Well, I agree. And I think another factor, and on top of that, and it's a point well made, I think, by you, is that this is a team that has a bunch of guys who've grown up together. So you're not leaving, you're not dropping into a team and saying that you have to leave. You're playing with guys you've played with in Bridgeport, you've played with on the island, you've moved to Brooklyn with. you have a coach who you've played for many years and a GM who locks you up to the long-term deal, favorable or not, he was willing to commit to you long-term. So there are probably and you're on a good team, like a team that has a chance to win it all.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Not the favorite,
the puck, Richie, to John Tavares.
Yeah,
every
that's
night.
Right.
Is he a fit for the Winnipeg Jets? We've spoken.
We get into that, let's do it this way.
Okay,
let's look at it from the Islanders' perspective.
Sure.
Okay, you're the New York Islanders. You sit right now, 23 points in 20 games. You're fourth in the division, in the Metropolitan Division, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have a +8 goal differential, which is third best in the whole conference, okay?
Yeah.
So you think you have a legitimate chance to win the Cup? I think so. I think you have a legitimate
In a wide-open East, do you say why not us?
I think it's a wide-open NHL.
Sure.
Yeah, and Hamonic, without him last year, they certainly had a huge gap. I mean, they played essentially Game 7, 45 minutes in their own zone. I mean, that's how slanted the ice was. He certainly would have helped in that regard. He plays the right side. He's playing with Nick Leddy right now. So you're Gar Snow.
Okay.
Okay. You have Nick Leddy and Hamonic as your first pairing. Your second pairing is DeHaan, who's a smart player, not dynamic in any way, but smart player, on the left side, and Johnny Boychuk, who's a nice acquisition for them on the right side. He can play in all situations. Okay. Then your third pairing is Brian Strait and Marek Zidlicky. We all know that Zidlicky, there's no chance he can step into the top four and replace Travis Hamonic. And we all know last year, if you watch them play, and I watch, I think, every game of that series, Johnny Boychuk was exhausted at the end of that series. He had nothing left because he was playing too much, and it was too much, just too much on him. He couldn't take the weight of Travis Hamonic.
Right.
So if you're making a trade, and I don't think you're moving Leddy or DeHaan to the right side, I mean, it's possible you are, but I think ideally you want to replace him with a right side defenseman who can play now.
Top four.
We're 100% top four. We're interviewing Don Maloney later, but Don Maloney had this interesting quote because he called on Travis Hamonic. He said, "The last things Garth being Garth Snow is looking for is draft picks and prospects. They want to find someone to slide in and help that team win right now. A lot of people are talking about the Rangers, Capitals, and Canadiens, but that team is good enough to contend right now. So you don't want to weaken it through a trade. So we know he's looking for a guy who can play top four D."
Top four, right side D.
Or D.
Sure.
Likely right side. But top, I mean, he's not going to, if you were to offer him a left side guy who's dominant, he's going to take him, I think. But ideally a top four, right side D. So, I mean, that, if you're looking around the league.
Who's got top four, right side D? It's the Winnipeg Jets.
So why don't we come back and break down other teams also that could be in the market for that.
Absolutely. Let's do that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking Travis Hamonic on TSN 1290.
I think you're always shocked when something like this, but at the same time, you're human beings and everyone deals with a lot of things. So, we're there to support him. We're there for him and made sure we let him know that. So just focus on playing, and I'm sure that's what he wants to do, and I know that's what we want to do and keep things going here.
Continuing our conversation about Travis Hamonic here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, that was John Tavares talking about Hamonic. And, I mean, it's sort of a, I think you can feel the sympathy that that his Islanders colleagues have for him and know how difficult it seems to have been for him to request this trade, because there doesn't sound like there's any animosity regarding it whatsoever. It sounds like they've accepted what he's requested, him being Hamonic, and that they're preparing to support him 110% of the time. And that's sort of a unique situation there in the dressing room of the Brooklyn, New York Islanders here. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. So, Richie, before the break, you read the quote from Don Maloney that where he says, Garth Snow is looking for players who can help him today in stepping into that lineup. And we've, speculated that what would the Islanders want for Travis Hamonic? In return, they'd want another defenseman, a top four, potentially a top four right side defenseman. That's why there's a lot of match here between Winnipeg and the Islanders. Of course, he wants to come back to Winnipeg. So the question I have is, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, are you calling Garth Snow and you're saying, Bufflin or Myers or Trouba, or is one of them off limits? Or how are you approaching this from Kevin Cheveldayoff's perspective, and how are you approaching it from Garth Snow's perspective?
It's tricky because I don't think you can look at anything in the D as one being mutually exclusive from the other. So, for example, if you're not going to be able to re-sign Dustin Byfuglien, then are you as comfortable trading Tyler Myers for Hamonic, possibly leaving you with Hamonic and Trouba on the right side and thereby losing your two best offensive right side defensemen in Byfuglien and Myers? Is that something you're prepared to do? I think Garcinot's asking price for the Jets is likely Trouba. That's what I think. I think Myers might be, if he can't find any other fits, he might be okay with Myers, might want something tossed in. Nothing of that much significance, but that's what I would think. I don't think Byfuglien's a starter because he's going to be a pending UFA. He's going to cost a boatload of money. And, you know, if you look at the Islanders' books, they have Okposo, they have Franz Nielsen coming up. Some of their guys are you're getting a little bit more of a squeeze on the back end, and whoever's hit you had coming in for Hamonic, you'd have to take into account. So I'm not sure that's something that I see happening. So I think it's probably a Myers or Trouba is what he'd be starting with. And what I do, I wouldn't trade Trouba for Hamonic. I just think that you'd be selling so low on a guy who's young and has a ton of great qualities. And I know that Hamonic is a really favorable contract, but Trouba is cost controlled as well in terms of he has four more years of RFA status after this season. So I wouldn't do that. Myers for Hamonic I would do. I would feel fine doing that. Although, you're going to leave yourself a little bit vulnerable offensively on the back end if Byfuglien does go. We don't know what will happen there. And then Hamonic and Trouba would be your two right-side guys who I don't think can quarterback the power play at the level that, certainly not the level that Byfuglien can. I don't think even at the level really that Myers can offensively. So that's my take on it from the Jets' perspective at least.
Yeah, I think you make some really good points, Richie, and I think that's why this Travis Hamonic situation is so favorable. I think we'd all agree that he would look great in a Jets uniform. You know, a Manitoba boy coming back home. He's an excellent shutdown defenseman, as we talked about last segment. But I think it's going to be difficult to make that happen, Richie, for much of the reasons that you mentioned. I don't think the Jets have any interest in trading Jacob Trouba at this point, even though he might be struggling a little bit early on in the season. He's a top draft pick of this franchise. He's got a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. There's 3 years or 4 years difference between the age there. And with Travis Hamonic, you might not have the offensive ability that you like, but I think they see that offensive potential in Trouba. I don't think we've seen Jacob Trouba at his best offensively. I think we saw it at times last year, but especially I think he's still 3 or 4 years away from having a career season, if you want to say that. I think he's still developing, right? And when you talk about other teams, to me, these Western Canadian teams are very interesting, Drew, because you hear about Peter Chiarelli and Edmonton having a lot of interest in Travis Hamonic. Well, absolutely. If you're talking about a right shot top four defenseman, Justin Schultz is injured right now. I don't think the Islanders are trading for Justin Schultz. And if you're talking about Darnell Nurse, this is his rookie year. He's a left shot defenseman.
That's right.
And I don't think that they're going to trade an established shutdown defenseman like Hamonic for a package involving Darnell Nurse. So then if you want to go to some other teams, Vancouver, Calgary. Well, Calgary, they made their trade at the draft last year. They acquired Dougie Hamilton. Do they really need to acquire Travis Hamonic right now? Do they want to give up a TJ Brody or a Dougie Hamilton or a Dennis Wideman? First of all, I don't think necessarily that's a fit for the Islanders as well. Maybe Brody, but him and Giordano have been very good on that top pair. Then you look at Vancouver. Well, look at the right side of Vancouver. Chris Tanev, you've got Yannick Weber there.
But they're not. No, it's Tanev for him. I mean, that's what the trade would be.
Right, and so then Edler and Hamhuis, Richie, are left side defensemen.
That's right.
So that probably won't be a fit. So out of those four teams, which are the teams which would probably make the most sense considering Hamonic wants to be close to home, you have difficulty finding a match in all of those teams. And that makes me believe that there's probably a better chance that Hamonic gets traded to a team that isn't one of those four teams. But again, it seems like he wants to go there, and Garcinot would probably make something fit there. But I think you could find reasons, Rich, to not have a trade with any one of those teams because they aren't necessarily getting a defenseman of equal quality back or maybe the right fit. I agree with Rich, by the way. I think if there's any defenseman that makes sense to be traded straight up for Hamonic, it's Tyler Myers. But then again, you have to ask yourself, well, does Chevy want to trade a guy that he just went out and acquired last year, who played really well down the stretch, and he's been one of their top defensemen as well this year? Does he want to disrupt that and lose some offense, as you mentioned? I think you could find a lot of reasons why all four of these Canadian teams won't be able to work out a trade for Hamonic.
I think it's interesting. I mean, I think one thing is, you know, you're the Jets. If you're looking, if you're Kevin Trevadoff in your office, I mean, you always look at the options that come up, and this is something that just came up out of the blue. But if you're looking at needs of your team, that's probably, it's funny, it's the last need. I mean, sure, the right side is your last need.
Right.
So you're really swapping piece for piece here.
But they do need a shutdown defenseman, though, because Trouba is their only real shutdown defenseman.
And he hasn't been playing that way. So, right. That's a good point, and I agree with that. But if you're looking for making that move, again, that's the vacuum thing, right? I mean, if you're going to trade out Myers, okay, but if you're going to sign Bufflin, what are you going to do with Bufflin, and how does that all play into in terms of creating offense, and are you relying on Enstrom, who doesn't have the shot to be able to quarterback the power play the way you want to do it? So, I mean, those are factors, and Morrissey's still taking a while to develop here, and you're not going to put that kind of a pressure on him now.
Can I point out for a second, sorry for interrupting, can I point out that, you know, Garth Snow is not your conventional general manager and that he is a little more willing to go out there and take a risk. We've seen him before trade for a pending unrestricted free agent. That was Thomas Vanek a couple years back, which blew up on him. He's also been willing to go and draft sort of the controversial player, Josh Hosang, in the first round. So if, you know, I'm not saying that he doesn't want, I think he would probably ask for Myers over, you know, that's the guy he's probably asking for. He's probably asking for Trouba, but he would probably take Myers. I wouldn't be shocked if any general manager is going to trade for, like, a Dustin Bufflin. He might be that guy, you know, just because he does like to live a little bit on the edge in terms of, as a general manager.
Fair enough, but it would take more.
Right, and then so I agree it would take more. And so I went back and I looked at the Islanders and their goaltending prospects, because that's another area the Jets are flush in. And the Islanders
fair enough, but they want to win now.
I know they want to win now, but you can build a package around a guy who's going to help you now and a guy who's going to help you a year or 2 years down the road if you think he's your long-term answer,
but, I mean,
and Yaroslav Halak isn't. I'm just throwing that out there. I agree that they're looking for guys. First and foremost, the package is going to be built around a guy who's going to help them win today and win this season. Sorry.
Well, no, I mean, it's fair. Fair enough. I just think if you look at it, I think the team that intrigues me the most for this is Minnesota. And that's because you have Ryan Suter, you know he'll eat the big minutes. You have Jared Spurgeon, who is coming up, and I like Jared Spurgeon. I think he's a good player. He and Matt Dumba are both coming up on RFA deals. Spurgeon's older than Dumba, different rights in regards to arbitration. But you have your right side, smaller guys on the right side to move the puck. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have Brodin. He can play the other side, but he's a left shooting guy. So, and then you have Scandella, who's on IR right now. Interesting pieces there. Sure. He's cost controlled. You have assets on the back end, assets that you can plug in now. Now, Spurgeon plays a different game than Hamonic does.
Yep, more offensive oriented. Richie, the obvious one is Minnesota's close to Manitoba. Right.
Well, it's an hour flight.
That's why it makes sense. Yeah. It fits all of the needs, and I agree. I think if you're Chuck Fletcher, you'd love to have Travis Hamonic on your team as a second pair defenseman. Maybe even plays top pair.
But
you got Ryan Suter playing half of the time. They already have a good defense. We've talked about how good that Wild defense is with Dumba, on that third pair, and he's coming along. Needs to get better defensively, but you're talking Suter, Brodin, Scandella, Spurgeon, Christian Follin, Prosser's in there.
And Riley
hasn't even gone into the lineup this year.
Yeah, Riley, the UFA that they signed out of college.
Yeah, and so I agree with Rich. I think that's an option because I do agree with Rich. I don't think you're going to see Hamonic traded within division for obvious reasons. You don't see in-division trades often anyways.
Well, he also doesn't want to go in-division. He wants to go somewhere closer to Winnipeg, which, like you said, the one flight to Manitoba, if it's not Winnipeg itself. Let me throw this team out there. What about Colorado?
Well, I mean, again, you're talking about
Eric Johnson.
And Tyson Barrie. So, I mean, you're talking about another team that has essentially, if you're looking for needs on the roster, it's, not really their need.
Right.
I mean, again, everybody could use Hamonic.
Sure. But if you're Garth Snow, or if you're Joe Sakic, would you rather see Hamonic on, if you're going to trade Travis Hamonic and you're Joe Sakic, would you rather have Hamonic or would you rather have Eric Johnson? Eric Johnson under contract, you know, cost certainty up until the year 2023. I just think that, again, there gets it gets you what Garth Snow's looking for, which is a, you know, top flight defenseman to step into your lineup.
I think that's a good thought.
I think the difficulty is, as Rich mentioned, you have to be trading back a top four right side defenseman. So Minnesota Wild makes sense, but then you're going to have to part with you're not parting with Ryan Suter, right?
No.
So then you got to give up your next best option.
Well, they'll ask for Brodin.
Right. And that's pretty much what you're going to have to do. Would you trade Brodin?
I don't think Minnesota does that.
Brodin's a heck of a defenseman, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult. Another team, you know, just thinking about where it would make sense. But again, you get the issue of, is there a top right defenseman mm-hmm. coming back? Is Chicago? Chicago is relatively close. They're not happy with Trevor Daly. The insiders have already told us that mm-hmm. they're looking mm-hmm. to move Trevor Daly.
Mm-hmm.
Travis Hamonic would look pretty good on that second pair of Chicago. But again, who is Chicago giving up? Are they going to trade Trevor Van Riemsdyk in a prospect?
That's not.
I don't think they need to win now.
I mean, they just need to win now. They right. need the guy who can play big time minutes.
Right.
Yeah. They're looking for a guy who can play 20 to between 20 and 25 minutes per game.
The Jets are lined up to make a deal if they want to make that deal. I mean, obviously the Islanders have to be on. I just think Minnesota's that wild card there, I think.
It'll be interesting. We will keep abreast of it here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be bringing in NHL Senior Vice President of Hockey Operations, Chris King. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.